welcome to Radio Oldie, sponsored by Baillie Gifford Actual Investors. Looking beyond today's headlines, Baillie Gifford backs exceptional companies driving progress and helping investors benefit from long-term growth.
Hello, and welcome to Radio Oldie with me, Harry Mount, editor of The Oldie, and Charlotte Metcalf, editor of The Oldie Supplements, including the brilliant new Oldie Review of Books, included free in the magazine. And there's a brilliant piece in it by Charlotte about the new novel by Jay McInerney, See You on the Other Side, which will come on to its disappointing aspect in a moment. But actually, Fruity, you had a great time out on the town with him in New York City. Can you explain what you got up to that night?
I did indeed. Well, actually, I went to interview him about his brilliant book, Brightness Falls, because at the time I was making a documentary about the 1980s and greed in New York. And so I went to his flat to interview him. Jay, being Jay, got terribly excited about the whole thing and insisted he took me and my small crew out to dinner at Keith McNally's restaurant, Baltazar, of great fame, which was featured in Keith McNally's recent book, I Regret Almost Everything. And anyway, to cut a long story short, we ended up in a nightclub. I messed up all my filming the next day because we were all having such a good time. And he was just such a fun, great, sort of absolute personification of everything that was wild and fun. And
did he pay for you all?
Oh, God, yes.
See, that's amazing.
He's unbelievably generous.
No British writer would do that.
No, but it was fun. It was at the height of author's fame, wasn't it? I remember when we went to Nell's nightclub, also owned by Keith McNally afterwards, we went right to the top of the queue and the red rope being pulled aside for us. And that was, he represents that era when so many authors were famous.
And it's the same on this side of the Atlantic. The late Martin Amis was a little bit older, not that much older, but he was big news. When I was a gossip columnist on the Evening Standard, the Daily Telegraph, 25 years ago, not just a new book by him, but just talking to him or people like him, they'd be in the gossip columns, whereas now gossip columns are largely, if not always, devoted to celebs you've never heard of, or legitimate film stars, you know, talented people. But the days of writers being considered not only in the gossip columns, but on the news pages have gone.
Yes, sadly.
But you say, also sadly, Jay McInerney's latest book, See You on the Other Side, is not in the class of those famous books like Bright Lights, Big City in 1984 and Brightness Falls in 1992.
No, it's not. It was a disappointment. And I'd just like to quote from the piece I read, a very, very, sort of sums it up really, Cosmo Landisman, who writes for us quite a bit. And he just said this, although it was a likeable book, and he says, Cosmo says, it's just never as funny, sexy, or emotionally engaging as it should be for a book that is saying goodbye to a New York and a way of life we once loved. I think that really does sum up the whole demise of that gorgeous, glitzy, literary scene here and the other side of the pond.
I think there's a thing also, quite literally, literary writers selling fewer copies and publishers used to, not with those big names, but used to, I believe, subsidise the less well-selling literary writers with the profits from blockbusters. And so brilliant, but perhaps not top-selling people had, not particularly lavish, but they had book launches. You and I know lots of writers who bemoan the fact that their publishers won't pay for book launches. On the rare occasion I write a book, I'm perfectly happy to, but I throw it myself. I understand that publishers don't have the money anymore. But that thing of going to glamorous parties that you and I used to doesn't really happen anymore.
No, that's sad.
The other thing actually about that, I remember Martin Amis in fact once saying, is that there's a problem when you as a writer become famous. So he in the early days could stand on the corner of a room or anywhere in a restaurant or whatever and observe people. When you become very famous, suddenly people are coming up to you. You're not anonymous. And Jay McInerney became very famous and he's nice looking, went to all the smart restaurants. So instead of being an observer, you are the observed, but also you're having conversations more about yourself, even if you don't want to. So it's harder to see real life, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Oh. Now, I think you liked the Christopher Howes article in your supplement on actually how to make a book. When you're holding a book in your hands, a huge amount has gone into the actual book. I mean, Christopher Howes almost literally takes apart the book and its ancient origins. So even things like the paper you don't think about when you're reading, but he talks about how an ordinary novel will be printed on uncoated paper weighing between 60 and 100 grams per square meter. I love all this. And an art book on coated paper is heavier, weighs 200 to 350 grams per square meter. And even without knowing these things, these facts, you notice it. You notice when books are glued together and they fall apart.
Yes.
You notice when they're sewn together.
Yes, I know the book is a as an object, really, he's writing about, which is really interesting because you just can never imagine. I mean, in this article, there are so many sections to this, you know, from the paper, the format, the printing, the signatures, the perfect binding, the sewing, the book block, the rounding, the edges, the chasing, the end papers, the square, the raised bands, the tooling. And I haven't even heard of half these things.
Yeah, so exactly. Really, but it's funny, you're handling them the whole time. And a lot of them, because books are obviously extremely ancient, their terms are very ancient, but we use them today. So I love Christopher explaining, I didn't know that the format or sizes of books are still named after the formats of William Caxton's day, the man who printed the first English printed books. And so he came up with the idea that one big leaf or page folded once was called folio, thus those big folio books. Folded once more, it was called quarto, and each time you fold it, you obviously double the amount of pages, so that had eight pages. And fold it once more, and it's octavo, i.e. an eighth time, and that produces 16 pages. And these are extremely, incredibly interesting, so even the most boring book becomes a little more interesting now you know how it's made. And I think you were struck by the dust jacket aspect.
Well, I was, especially as Christopher Howes is going all the way back to Caxton, and you know, some of making books has not apparently changed that hugely, but he is rather rude about the current state of the dust jacket, because he says, and I quote, "Collectors demand mint dust jackets, but now instead of a dust jacket over cloth covered boards, even expensive books printed on demand have plasticized laminated covers. Soft touch lamination gives a nasty, rubbery feel, currently much in vogue." Which is a wonderful,
yeah,
classic Christopher Howes way of ending it.
Very funny. And Fruity, you yourself have written a brilliant book about not so much what dust jackets or covers are made out of, but how the dust jacket or the covers are not as good or as enjoyable as they used to be. It's illustrated the two terrific covers, a real daring do 1959 edition of the Jungle Book with Mowgli attacking a lion, and then a lovely tiger.
That's what's his name, Shere Khan.
Oh, yeah, sorry. And then there's a lovely cover of Edith Wharton's Old New York for Virago, and you worked for Virago, so you know all about those fantastic green covers. You worked for the famous Carmen Khalil.
I did, and I absolutely loved it. It was my first job after university. And as I write here, I was stationed opposite Carmen Khalil's office in what served as stockroom, postroom, machine room, alongside floor-to-ceiling bookshelves of Virago classics. And it was just that they were so beautiful with their green spines and luscious covers, and they really, really spent a lot of time worrying about the covers, and it does make a difference. And as a child, I used to be taken by my father to Haywood Hill every week.
Who coincidentally appear in the main issue, in the new issue, because it's their 90th anniversary, and their chairman, Nicky Dunn, is writing about Haywood Hill and Nancy Mitford, who worked there in the main issue. But sorry, Fruity, go on.
Well, Nancy Mitford was not working there when I went.
No,
I don't think it had changed that much, because as children you went down to the basement where there was the secretary sat, and there were all the children's books. And so I used to be allowed to buy a beautiful Dent Dutton edition, and they had the most incredible covers, like this one in this edition of The Jungle Book. But, you know, Treasure Island, I mean, just, you know, what... It was so exciting. It had a cover of him, Jim Hawkins, leaning down from the rigging with a pirate chasing him up with a knife between his teeth. You know, these... Nowadays, so I'm going to use as an example, you know, sort of Nicholas Shakespeare's new novel, Frame 37, which I have reviewed.
You've reviewed in the main issue of the author, yeah.
And it's just, you know, this is a really interesting, very, very dense and complex thriller stroke, but it's very literary thriller. And incredibly wonderful, rich background, all set in Argentina and other places. And one of the reasons I sort of wrote this article, in a way, the cover just shows a man running into the distance in a raincoat, into a wood, with red lettering. And it prompted me to go into my local dorms and have a look at all these books. And it's just, you know, it's ridiculous. They're just, it's all become so generic.
And in fact, Private Eye does an irregular feature about book covers. And it brilliantly shows that very often two... Mm-hmm. Entirely different books by different writers have an almost identical cover, which is exactly that, a man running away, or quite often a man in kind of 40s London or 40s Berlin,
yes,
standing on a street corner, leaning against a lamppost, looking a bit shady. And I think that explains the problem, is that there's still a lot of publishers who put a lot of work and time into their covers, but they're so desperate, perhaps, because as we said, there are a few books that sell loads of copies and then quite a lot of books that don't sell many copies. So once they see one that works, they then proceed to imitate it.
There are a few goodies, though. Edward Chisholm's books, A Murder in Paris, 68. That is a good cover, because it shows, partly because it's got Alain Delon in it, and A Waiter in Paris. So bravo to two associates. As I say in this article, two associates are the designers who designed both these book covers, and they do at least lure you in with a bit of mystery. But I mean, as I say here, as for Bell Burden's book Strangers,
which is a terrific book by a blue-blooded New York clever lawyer who seemed to have a perfect life with a massive apartment in Manhattan and a holiday cottage in Martha's Vineyard. Suddenly her husband declared he was leaving her and didn't want access to the children. It is a marvellous book, huge New York Times bestseller. I agree, it's got an incredibly boring cover. I think it's got a sort of outline of a bird flying somewhere.
There's no cover at all. I can't even remember it, that's the thing.
I think it is an outline of a blue bird, and you go, nothing to do with the rich New Yorkers or having an affair or the misery that emanated from that.
No.
It's funny, as I say, when particularly something like that, which was given a huge amount of publicity because she'd written an article about it before, you would have thought cover designers would be working at it night and day.
Yes, you would.
Anyway, this is all to be found in the new Oldie Review of Books, the brilliant supplement edited by Charlotte Metcalf, which is all part of the Oldie August issue. Thanks so much, Fruity.
Goodbye.
The Oldie is a huge fan of Hebridean Island cruises. Their small ships carry between just 38 and 48 guests around the Scottish islands, lochs and coastlines. They specialise in exploring the secret corners of Scotland's west coast aboard two small ships, Hebridean Princess with 48 guests and Lord of the Highlands with just 38. It's less cruise ship, more country house party at sea. Excellent food, remarkable scenery, and a wonderfully civilized atmosphere. To discover more and get savings of up to 20%, visit hebridean.co.uk or search Hebridean Island Cruises.